Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Hoosier Huddle podcast. I'm your host, Sammy Jacobs. TJ Innes will be along with us shortly. Unfortunately, we do not have a game to preview this week due to Hurricane Irma. FIU had to cancel the game in Bloomington on Saturday. So if you're holding tickets to that, they can be exchanged for the rescheduled game. IU is bringing in Charleston SES on October 7th. So there are instructions through IU how to do that. I will put them out on Twitter as soon as I can. Unfortunate situation. We hope everybody is all right down in South Florida and a speedy recovery there. But Indiana's coming off a win against Virginia. We'll take a look at that. We'll take a look at Charleston Southern and also the Big Ten schedules from 2020 and 2021 are out. So we'll give a quick breakdown on that. TJ, unfortunately, we don't have a game this weekend, but we do have 12 games on the schedule. I think we're pretty happy about that.
Yeah, I think, first off, I definitely echo the thoughts you shared, our thoughts and prayers with the people in Florida, and just a very difficult situation that Florida International was put in and that Indiana was put in as well. Obviously, football is not even secondary, way, way below that, but still, it's Fred Glass's job and Indiana University Athletics' job to do what's best for the Indiana University football program and the athletic department. And I feel like they have done that here with this addition of Charleston Southern. I think they're very proactive in, it seems, in reaching out to Florida International, letting them know, hey, we understand, that you guys are in a tough spot. And, being proactive about getting that game canceled early enough to get one of the few options out there that was appetizing for Indiana's football program to get that team scheduled, and that's Charleston Southern. Yes, an FCS team, and I understand that that's not it's not a sexy matchup at all. And there were some calls on social media and on some of the different sites around that discuss these things that, Indiana should reach out to Georgia Tech and give the Yellow Jackets a shot at, playing maybe a home and home this year in Bloomington plus another year in Atlanta. As interesting as that may have been, that's not the right move. That's not a smart move for Indiana's football program with where it is right now. There's no reason to make the schedule harder than it needs to be. And Charleston Southern was a team that, number one, Indiana is allowed to play an FCS school because and have it count towards the bowl game because they only have 4 conference home games. And then Charleston Southern is allowed to play that game because they had a game affected by Hurricane Irma as well. So it fell into place. It was an FCS team that was identified pretty early in the process as one that could be a matchup for Indiana. We'll do a lot of work on them leading up to that game, but just a quick snapshot of them. It's an FCS team that in 2016 did make the FCS playoffs, which is, you don't have to be great to be that, but you do have to be solid. And on the Sagarin ratings, which is a flawed system, but it does a decent job of kind of contextualizing FCS opponents and FBS opponents in kind of the same list. Charleston Southern's a team that fell right below Arizona. So one spot below Arizona last year. This year, they played Mississippi State, and it did not go well, to say the least. They lost 49-0. It could have been a lot worse. They had 33 yards total for the game. And I think they picked up like two first downs. So, you know, who knows what to make of that. They are clearly much worse than Mississippi State. That's all we know for sure from that. And that's the only sample size we have for their team this year. In short, it's a game Indiana should win. It's a game that helps them get another victory towards bowl eligibility. And, you know, it falls in place to where, in theory, you should be able to get a lot of your depth players some run in that game after you take care of business in the first half. And it gives you a nice little, as you said, a nice respite between Michigan and Penn State. Penn State and Michigan, I should say. So everything about it makes sense. It's an unfortunate situation that you lose your bye week, where it was really in a good spot there October 7th. It was really in a perfect spot. And you lose that, and now you get it much earlier than you would like. Particularly, this was a chance for Indiana to build a lot of momentum heading back into the Big Ten with games against Florida International and Georgia Southern at home to really build some positive momentum. And this team has a lot of things to work on before taking on Penn State. And you'd like to have more than just one game to do that. Got to adjust. You've got to, and Tom Allen talked about it. You have to be able to overcome adversity. And this is a little bit of football adversity that Indiana's team is going to have to adjust to and be able to take this extra preparation time and apply it. Make sure you're ready for Georgia Southern. Make sure that you are ready, who also has some extra time to prepare for you. You know, make sure you're ready for that option attack, and then develop the offensive line a little bit more. Develop the quarterback competition. Who knows how that's going to play out in the next, the next 8 or 9 days of practice? Who knows? So there's going to be a lot of questions heading into Georgia Southern. But overall, I think a nice job done by the IU athletic staff and Fred Glass, which. I think they need to be commended for how quickly they were able to act and for the position they were able to put the football program in to get that 6 wins that you're looking for to continue building things towards a better future.
Yeah, and it's definitely when they started bringing up Georgia Tech, really made me angry. I know that there are fans out there wanted to see a matchup, talk about playing in Murfreesboro at MTSU. And I hate to be rude, but the New Yorker in me is going to come out. You're out of your mind. If you're going to play Georgia Tech on a neutral site, you're going to give up a home FCS game, regardless of how many people show up to that game. I expect probably a small crowd. Everybody has been, if you're a season ticket holder, you've been planning October 7th, maybe you planned that your vacations that week. And I don't blame you. It's inconvenient for a lot of people like that. But you cannot play a triple option team that's really good like Georgia Tech and give up a home game for it. I'd rather get 6 wins, go to a bowl game, and play whoever you play. Do it that way. This program is not where – it's not where it is to play those types of games. You need 6 wins, and to continue building those 6 wins, get to a bowl game, you get those 15 practices, which builds your depth, which IU has had. We've seen IU's issues with the depth on both of the lines. So, you know, at all costs, get to that bowl game. And I normally hammer on Fred Glass's scheduling abilities, and we'll hammer on it later. But kudos to Fred Glass. He did the right thing in canceling this game and bringing in Charleston Southern. Charleston Southern also gets a win. They get, you know, a $500,000 payday plus $50,000+ for travel expenses. So they're happy with that windfall of cash. And it's a game, like you said, TJ, where a lot of these reserves could get in and start playing, start developing, things like that. Also, you have Brandon Knight, who's been on the shelf since the beginning of the season. You give him this is where the early bye week helps. You give him a week of rest to get ready. You could rest him for a couple of days to where that foot feels 100% and then start bringing him back or just work on conditioning and things like that. So that's where it helps the early bye week. We'll see. They're going to have to play 10 games in a row now, and that's extremely difficult given who they're playing. And if you added Georgia Tech to that schedule, it's what the heck are you doing? So that's my that's our take on it. We'll preview Charleston Southern. We'll get ready. Hopefully some of their games are on ESPN 3 or 4 or 5 or wherever on the internet. We can get them. If somebody does know where we can watch Charleston Southern games, please shoot us a message so we could get working on the Bucks. Anyway, TJ, let's talk about the win at Virginia. These first two games, which has really been a whirlwind with that opening night Thursday loss to Ohio State, then going to Virginia where the offense didn't start clicking until basically halfway through that second quarter. We saw Richard Lego start the game. He went 3 for 10 for 24 yards and a pick. I thought he was better than people thought he was. I went back and watched the first half. A lot of the balls, you know, the receivers were well covered, but a lot of those balls that drops hit Luke Timian, those are catches that Luke Timian normally makes. The interception was just, he just missed through that, underthrew it, a little short-armed it a little bit. It wasn't the worst pick in the world. The guy made a great play as well on it. But I thought Peyton Ramsey played unbelievably well for a redshirt freshman. And going forward, Tom Allen has said that Richard Lego is his starter. They're both going to play. That wasn't a mystery going into the season, I don't think. They're both going to play. I thought, you know, watching the TV broadcast, you saw that Lego had his helmet on after the first drive. And then once Ramsey led them to two touchdowns, he knew his day was pretty much over. And he was a great teammate during it all. So I think his leash is longer than people think. But the reason he didn't go back in is because Ramsey had that offense clicking and going. And we'll see what they do against Georgia Southern, a team where they're not really good, but it's a team that runs that triple option, eats up clock, and limits possessions. So we'll see if Lego struggles early, if they put Ramsey in and for a couple drives, or just let him play out the rest of the game. What are your thoughts on this quarterback? I don't want to call it a controversy, but this quarterback situation.
I mean, very interesting is thought for me on it. And I really don't think that the coaches anticipated having Lego struggle as he did. And I agree with you, he wasn't awful, but I think it was the right call to put in Ramsey and provide someone a spark. I think that's what they were looking for. I don't think they were expecting something. Yeah, they had to do something, and I don't think they were expecting Peyton Ramsey to rattle off three straight scoring drives and do so, with his arm, which, that first touchdown pass he threw, that was mostly Simi Cobbs just going into, Superman mode and bouncing off the tackle and good blocking downfield as well. But still, credit there for Ramsey. It was a nice drive. And then his run, again, good blocking downfield. Virginia seemingly had no clue that Ramsey was even capable of running. To me, that's what it looked like anyway. And they looked pretty surprised that he took off and nobody reacted to it until he was 15 yards down the field. But again, it was a good decision. It was a good play call, and it was well executed, another good drive. And then, you know, getting into position to give Griffin Oaks a chance to hit that field goal. So I don't think that the coaches expected that to happen, but it did. And then at that point, it would have been really foolish to go back to Lego with as well as Ramsey was going as you start the second half. The offense, you know, it was not terrific in the second half, but it wasn't bad either. So, and he had a very nice pass to Donovan Hale. And Indiana's running game, I thought, looked the best it has all season, which is, you know, it's a small sample size, but the bar for that was low. But it did look the best it had all season there late in that game with Morgan Ellison in the game and Ramsey at quarterback. So what you're left with moving forward is you've got Richard Lego, who, you know, looked incredible for the first half of the Ohio State game, and then he was under pressure for the entirety of the second half, so it's hard to take anything away from him there, but I thought he played very well overall against Ohio State. And then, you know, he had a rough start against Virginia, but not bad enough to say, well, it's definitely Ramsey moving forward. So I think you're going to have a very interesting session of practices here, a nice stretch of practice to really evaluate things. And then as long as Richard Lego is able to function with knowing he's not going to take every snap and knowing that if the offense or if himself is a little slow or a little, you know, struggling somewhat, that Ramsey's going to go in there. If Lego can do that without looking over his shoulder and forcing things, because that's my concern, is that Lego reverts to what we saw some of last year, which is trying to do too much and forcing the action to prove himself. If he reverts to that and starts making those mistakes again, that's bad for the team. But if he's able to just function within the offense, continue to make good decisions, and then Ramsey can work in as a change of pace, I think that's ideal. That's the best-case scenario for the offense. And I have no doubt that Lego can be a great – but I hope that subconsciously he doesn't force things and try to prove himself as the number one guy. That would be my concern.
Yeah, the thing that I felt good about on Saturday was his throw wasn't a bad decision. It was just a bad throw. And that's something you can work on as well. He had Timian one-on-one on the wheel route where Timian, if he lofts that ball over the defender, that's going for a big play. I don't know if the safety was coming over to blow it up, but if he catches that, that's going for at least 20 yards or more. So it wasn't like that. I think going in, they know both of them are going to play in the game. It's not like last year where you had no idea when Diamant was going to play and things.
Yeah.
The game plan going in is we're going to play two quarterbacks. You saw it against Ohio State. When Lego was playing really, really well, they took him out and put Ramsey in. I believe it was like third or fourth drive of the game. IU had a 7-0 lead, and you pull your starting quarterback. So I think it's not going to blindside him coming out of the game. So it's like anything, they played the hot hand. I thought they played it perfectly. They kept it with the hot hand, which I think gives us all a sigh of relief on what Duke's. How many times between the coach just, you know, play two quarterbacks and then up, we got to go back to the other guy to give him reps. But they took out the hot hand and they continue to struggle. So I think they know going forward what the plan is. Rich is going to start at some point. Peyton's going to come in. If Rich is dealing, you know, they're going to stay with the hot hand because they need these wins. And we've seen them. The one thing that Peyton Ramsey does that Richard Lego doesn't do is run the ball. Even though Rich had some good runs, he had two first down runs there, you know, escaping up the pocket. And he's more mobile than people give him credit for. But Peyton Ramsey, man, he's just got another gear and just better vision running the ball than Rich. And it's not a knock. Some guys can't run, some guys can. And Rich has the better arm. We've seen it. You know, he threw for 400 some odd yards against Ohio State. And Peyton Ramsey, while he throws a good ball and he could throw it short, completed 11 in his first 11 passes, he can't sling it around like Lego does and throw that deep ball as good as Lego does. So they each bring something a little bit different to the table. They're both going to play. So I think it's not a controversy. It's a two-quarterback system, and usually sometimes it doesn't work, but it'll be interesting to see what it brings to the table. TJ, let's move on to the future
schedules. I wanted to mention the defensive performance from that Virginia game real quick. You know, in rewatching some of it, I thought that they were really, really terrific. The tackling that they had was, in my opinion, I won't say it was the best, but it was up there with the best tackling performances that I've seen an Indiana defense have in quite some time. I thought a number of players really stood out. Chris Covington, I thought, played a wonderful game. I know Tom Allen agrees with that. He was named the Defensive Player of the Week for the Hoosiers. I thought he was really deployed well with the scheme and the play calling, and I thought he executed very well and had himself a really nice game. Indiana's got a wonderful linebacking duo. And then I think that in all fairness, that game
they had two takeaways, you know, and they got
they had two takeaways
that were taken away by the refs.
Yeah, it was the pass roughing the passer for Marcelino Ball. I know Tom Allen was critical of Ball. I get it. On TV, there was some play acting involved there, which, you know, you got to do what you got to do if you're a banker there. I get it. But and Ball can't allow that to – it can't put the refs in a position to be able to call that. And then the targeting call, just whatever. I mean, I think anybody that watched that play knows Greg Gooch was playing defense, and there's not really anything else that you would ask him to do differently next time.
Maybe two-hand touch the quarterback and ask for the ball.
Yeah.
Mr. Banker, but can you give me the ball?
I don't know what else you could do, but I just wanted to make sure we mentioned the defense after a frustrating for them second half against Ohio State with a couple blown assignments and just, you know, I know some body language that Tom Allen wasn't real keen on. They bounced back and had a really good effort against Virginia and should not have given up even 17 points if things would have gone the way that they should have. So really good job by the defense. And they did, especially in the first half when, you know, Indiana's offense was playing in a way that they very easily could have fallen behind. And then you're dealing with the, you know, kind of pressure that you're staring 0-2 in the face on the road of an ACC opponent that could have given them some confidence if they build a lead on you. But the defense made sure that didn't happen. And then in the second half, they helped slam the door shut for the Hoosiers. So I really good job by all involved there. And hopefully that's the start of a really good season for them.
Yeah. And I shout out to the special teams. It was awesome. Hayden Whitehead pinned Virginia deep all the time. Jayshon Harris, outside of that one punt return, was outstanding. Kick return was good. Yeah, that was awesome. Kick return was good. Kick coverage was good. Griffin Oaks was great. Like, that was the best IU's played on special teams in forever, and that's great to see. So, TJ, let's get down to schedules. Big Ten came out with their 2020 and 2021 schedules. We'll start with 2020. This is why Indiana needs to schedule non-conference games they can win. They open up the season on September 5th, 2020, in Madison, Wisconsin. That's a tough game. Then they play Western Kentucky and Ball State at home. I can live with that. Then you travel to Connecticut. Indiana all-time is 0-2 against Connecticut. And anytime you go on the road, now Connecticut might not be very good right now, but Randy Edsall is back at UConn. And he had that program running, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. So after UConn, they get Maryland at home, go to Rutgers, not a bad stretch. Then comes Michigan State and Penn State at home. You travel to Columbus to face Ohio State. You get Illinois as your second crossover at home. And then you have to go to Michigan before ending with Purdue at home. There's just, you cannot play another top-tier opponent. You can't. Wisconsin's a potential top 25 team in 2020. Michigan State could be up there. Penn State could be up there. Ohio State is always up there. Michigan is usually always up there. You have to find programs who are just bad. You find bad programs. It's a year where you play. It's a year that you play five conference home games, so you can't play an FCS team. I like the Ball State game. I like the Western Kentucky game. It gives, they're within the radius of 6 hours that Tom Allen wants to be in. There is a history between the two schools. So those are two games. Let's move on to 2021, where the schedule, I think, is absolutely brutal. Once again, IU will be opening Big Ten play, season opener, on the road, this time in Iowa City. That's likely a night game, and Iowa City at night is – you just can't win there. I have not seen Iowa lose a night game in a long time. You play Idaho, who I believe moved back down to the FCS, and then you play Cincinnati as well, and then you go to Western Kentucky. While I like playing Western Kentucky, those games should not be played on the road. You're not recruiting Western Kentucky that much. There's just no reason to go to Western Kentucky. Only bad things could happen down there. If you win, big deal, you're supposed to win. If you lose, it's like Bowling Green and everybody talks about it. And then you go at Maryland, Michigan and Rutgers at home, at Penn State, Ohio State at home, at Michigan State, Minnesota, and at Purdue. That's a rough schedule. Minnesota, you expect PJ Fleck to have that program going. Whether or not he'll still be there is anybody's guess. I would think so.
Yeah.
Because that program's a sleeping giant as well. And then just now you're backloaded on that schedule. You're going to have to win these early games. You could, if you don't beat Cincinnati, Western Kentucky, you're looking at road trip to Maryland going at 1-3. And then you have Michigan. You're looking at a 1-5 start potentially. Rutgers coming in. And then you finish with Penn State, at Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan State, and Minnesota before going to Purdue. If I know it's so far down the road in 2021, but this schedule has me really worried. I don't know where IU is going to be as a program. Hopefully Tom Allen is still here. If IU history goes the way that IU history has gone, he will not be here. But we'll see. That this schedule screams 2-10 to me, and I hate it. Let's go play, instead of playing at Western Kentucky, play a MAC team at home. Instead of playing Cincinnati, Cincinnati's always tough. So let's go play somebody easier than that. So, TJ, that's my take on the schedule, and that's my rant. What are your quick thoughts?
Well, I don't disagree, and I would add, you said there's no reason to play at Western Kentucky and go there. I think you can leave off the Western part. There's no reason to go to Kentucky, period, football or otherwise.
I would play UK. If we ever got the UK series back, I would deal with going to Kentucky.
I don't know. I don't want anything to do with the state. But pettiness aside, I do agree with you that there's no reason for a road game there. I think that you look, for me, Indiana should be scheduling as a Kansas State or a Wisconsin did when they were building their program to what it is today.
I would say what's softer than cupcakes.
Yes. Yeah, if there's something softer and easier than cupcakes, give me those. Yeah, that was a good line from him, and it's absolutely true. There's no brownie points or bonus points or anything for scheduling a difficult non-conference schedule for Indiana. For Alabama and Clemson, that matters. It matters. For Indiana, it doesn't. It does not matter. It's about how many wins did you get in the non-conference schedule, three of them, because if you did, it means you only have to go 3-6 in the Big Ten to get to a bowl game. And as you continue to get the bowl games, your recruiting increases. And as you're recruiting and your visibility of the program increases, your program gets better. And your fan interest gets higher. And all of a sudden, hey, look at that. Indiana goes to a bowl game every year. Wow, how about that? And then you turn that 6 wins every year into 7 and 8. And then once in a magical decade or whatever, a season where the stars just align correctly, the schedule, the returning players, the bounce of the ball, those things just align, and all of a sudden you've won 10 or 11 games, and you're in New Year's Six Bowl. I mean, that's the kind of thing. Yeah, that's dreaming big. It's pie in the sky. But it starts with your schedule and scheduling to get yourself up to a perennial bowl team. And the way to do that is winning 3 non-conference games. And the way to make sure you do that, or to put yourself in the best position to do that, is with your non-conference schedule and not playing games against teams that are, toss-up games, essentially. It doesn't mean you'll automatically go out and beat teams like FIU. It doesn't mean that. Or Virginia. It doesn't mean you'll beat teams like that automatically. But you want to give yourself the best chance possible to get that done. And for the most part, I feel like Indiana does that, but there are some games that just don't make a whole lot of sense. And this Georgia Southern game is one of those, but it seems as if Tyson Summers doesn't really have things clicking up to their fans' expectations. So I think that that's a game that Indiana dodges a bit of a bullet. If they take care of business, they should be able to beat Georgia Southern pretty easily. But that's a game that just doesn't make a lot of sense against a triple option team. It's not near as bad as scheduling Navy, but again, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. So I do agree with you. There's some head scratchers, and the Big Ten schedule is going to be tough regardless when you're in the East. So and you know that as a reality going in. So you've got to schedule accordingly.
Yeah, and any year you can schedule an FCS team, they need to be on the schedule. One, it's almost
not
guaranteed
a great
to win.
FCS team.
Yes,
Dakota,
I don't want to see
James
Madison.
Madison.
Right, you
a
want
Charleston
a team that you could beat.
Yeah.
Yep, and it's great for the FCS
because
they need that money to survive. And that was one of the big drawbacks of the Big Ten not playing FCS teams is that these FCS programs survive on those payouts. So anyway, that does it for this week's Hoosier Huddle podcast.
Yep.
A reminder, the FIU game was canceled. There's no game on Saturday, so it's not going to be on TV. Don't travel to Bloomington. Sit back, relax, enjoy another Saturday of football. That's 2 in 3 weeks for us, and then you have 10 straight weeks of IU football.
Yep.
So we're very excited. Come back to HoosierHuddle.com. Follow us on Twitter @Hoosier_Huddle. Subscribe on iTunes as well. TJ, as always, thanks for jumping on with us. We'll be back next week previewing Georgia Southern on Wednesday.
Yep. Have a good week, everybody. Thanks for listening.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notified, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.